words do not express the hope that we have in Christ. There is no words to describe that. Our minds are feeble to even imagine appearing with Him in glory. It's an impossible task in this mind of flesh to really know what that is. And because of that, we lack motivation to set our affection on things above. We just have no idea what's out there, what's up there. That's part of faith and trust, I think. When Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall ye also appear with Him in glory. Because of that hope, verse number 5, mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth, and so on and so forth with the things mentioned there. And we talked about that last week. Because of that hope, we're motivated by that hope to serve Christ in this life. Or at least we should be. In verse number 7, and I hope this makes sense. Most of this outline came Saturday morning between 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. So as I reread it yesterday, it seemed to make sense. Hopefully it holds. That doesn't usually happen, but you wake up at 2:30 in the morning and can't go back to sleep. Get up and read the Bible is about the best thing you can do. Verse number 7 is referring back to the items in verse number 5. So verse number 7 says this: in the which ye also walked some time, when ye lived in them. Them being fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, covetousness, idolatry. In the which ye also walked some time, when ye lived in them. This verse reminds me of verse left my mind. The one that refers to you being saved out of those things. And ye were dead. The verse is like that. Ye also walk. You know, as believers, I think sometimes because of depravity, we need to be reminded of what we came from. There's a lot of verses in the Bible that seem to be intended to remind us of what we came from. That was you, you know, and there's terrible evil things mentioned in verse number 5, but that was me. I was there. In the which ye also walked some time when ye lived in them. And you know, even after salvation, we might be caught up in some of those things. Hopefully we're not living in them. That would be counterproductive to the cause of Christ and our eternal position, I guess, so to speak. Let us not forget what we came from, what the Lord saved us out of. In the which ye also walked some time when ye lived in them. But now ye also put off all of these. There's more things than just what was in verse number 5. There's more. And actually verse number 8, it's grouping these things in verse 8 back with verse number 5 and pointing out that you know, anger, wrath, malice, these are just as bad. We always want to put things in levels of how bad is that and how, you know, this is worse than that. No, these things in verse 8, they're just as bad as what's in verse 5. Anger, wrath, malice, it's just as bad as fornication, uncleanness, covetousness, idolatry. It's just as bad. It's counterproductive to the Christian walk. Put off all of these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. Filthy communication. Filthy, well, I don't cuss. Filthy communication is broader than a few four-letter words that the world deems as profanity. Filthy communication is way broader than that. If you don't have a problem with profanity, that's great. That's praise the Lord. But filthy communication is more than that. So, in the which ye also walked some time when ye lived in them. I think the point here is don't live in that stuff. Don't, because of the hope that we have, be motivated to change your affection. The way you think, your first reaction, your knee-jerk responses, set your affection on things above. If our affections are properly set, I have a feeling that unless, in the times of when anger gets a hold of us and we slip up a little bit and let loose of our guard and if our affections are on things above, we'll be slower to react in those negative ways. That takes practice. I'm here to, at least it does with me. I 40 years of practice of not responding wrong. Resisting the temptation to open my mouth without thinking. That takes practice. That self-control is elusive to me. Mortify, therefore, your members. You know, verse number 6, backing up just a second, those which things sake the wrath of God cometh on the children of disobedience. Now, in one sense, that's referring to the lost. And the wrath of God comes down on the lost, if not in, both in this life and in eternity. The wrath of God, He'll get His justice. He will. He's the almighty perfect God, and His justice is true and right. And these things are the reasons, are the weaknesses of the flesh that brings on the wrath of God. And we think of the wrath of God as this big apocalypse, and it is. But the wrath of God visits us daily in the little things too. God's displeased. You know, the spirit is squelched, burdened. Quenched is the right word. The wrath of God visits us for the little things, the little filthy communications. Opened my mouth at work last week. Shouldn't have. It wasn't necessarily filthy in what I think filthy is, but it was negative. It was unproductive to moving me and the people that I was communicating with forward in a progressive get better mentality in our relationship. It was negative. It was counterproductive. I feel like that's in this term, filthy communication. That it's in there. Oh, Brother Mike, you're setting up too high of a... I can't do that. 100% of the time, positive, moving people forward. Well, what is the cause of Christ if it's not that? But now, verse number 8, but now, But now, you were walking in those and living in those things, but now, you also put off all these. But now, it means now you're saved. Your affections have changed. Hopefully. If they haven't, you might want to check the saving part. But now, also put off all these: anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. God changed your heart. Paul exhorts us to set our affection, the things that we desire, on things above, things that last, things that are valid, honorable, pure, the things that are mentioned in verse 5 and verse 8, they have no productive contribution towards heavenly things. Or, I'll use this term carefully, the success of a believer's walk, the completeness of a believer's walk. Can we make it through a day with everything that we do being productive towards an authentic believer's walk? No, we can't. Not, we can't. Hopefully we want to. If that's not in your desire, why not? Why not? That's a honest question to self. Why not? There's a whole lot of what not to do in here. That's practical instruction. That's practical specific things. And each specific thing's not really the point. It's all of it together. And it's talking about your motivation, your mindset to your believer's walk. It's trying to point out through some practical items to get you down to the thought, what do you want in this life? What do you want? What's your heart's desire? What are your affections? I got a feeling my affections should be above all things, above everything. Closer walk with Thee. Closer walk with Christ. Doesn't really matter everything else in this life. What happens to me, how well I do my career, the family I raise. I mean, really none of that matters in the sense that what am I here for? I'm here in this life as a part of this creation. My affection is a closer walk with Christ. Everything else is a distraction, is it not? And I don't mind if you correct me on this. What are we here for? Now this verse number 9, it strikes me as significant. And we'll read it and then I'll tell you why. We had verse number 5. We had verse number 8. And they were lists. To not to, to not to, to not to, to not. Verse number 9 says what? Lie not one to another, seeing that you've put off the old man and his deeds. Why does Paul bring that to verse number 9? Special attention, a whole verse by itself. These other horrible things in verse 5, terrible things in verse 8, lists them out together in groups. And then verse number 9 is, don't lie to each other. Lie not one to another, seeing that you have put off the old man with his deeds. Lie not. You've put off the old man. Do we get that concept? The old man is off. Salvation by grace through faith, the old man is off and the new man is on. Lie not. You can't do that without changing your mindset, without cultivating a proper attitude and mindset. My point is, it's more than just not doing the not to's here. It's more. It's talking about what's in here, in your heart, affection on things above. Lie not one to another, seeing that ye have put off the old man. Lying is addressed in verse 9 with specific mention. It's the beginning of a verse. It's the last negative addressed in this list, in this chapter, and it's focused on all by itself. That's kind of pitiful. As I was thinking about it at 3:00 in the morning, Paul felt the need to place special emphasis on lying. Shouldn't even be a factor in God's people, in the assembly. Shouldn't even be a factor. It shouldn't even be mentioned at all. It's kind of pitiful, as I was thinking about it, that it even needed mention, but that it got special attention. Verse number 8 is nasty items that we can read through and think, well, I don't do that. I would urge all of us to readdress that and really not just gloss over the verse and say, well, I don't do that. Those are nasty. Do you? Or do you do some form of those things? I mean, the Bible says that to look upon a woman, you've already lusted in your heart. So lust is a factor. Even if you don't act on it. Same thing goes with all of these sins. Lying, false witness, misleading is sin. These things are all sin. Each is equally condemning as the other. We had a term, white lies. It's all sin. The old man is put off with his deeds. The old man is put off. I think sometimes we're guilty as Christians of not keeping the old man off. We slip back into those tendencies. And it's natural to struggle with that constantly. That which I would, I do not. And that which I would not, that I do. I mean, it's the ongoing battle with self. And the only success that we'll ever have with that is by grace, changing our affection. Setting our affection. Set, there's action. It's a verb. It's set your affection on things above. I believe that real, genuine salvation in an individual is noticeable. It's noticeable. The word we have for it is fruit. Because that's kind of the way the Bible describes it. But genuine salvation in an individual is noticeable. And it's noticeable because their heart changed. That doesn't mean their heart doesn't get calloused and slip this way and that way later. But their heart changed. And it's noticeable. In a lot of different ways. I mean, you've all seen it before. I believe the change of heart becomes obvious, that old man being put off and that new man being put on. It becomes obvious in an exhibition of at least some fruit. We all know each other well enough to see desires and some intent. We don't always know one another's motive. But desires and affections become obvious in different ways. Even if we think we're private, still the things we do, our conversation, it exhibits fruit of some kind or another. Is it the old man fruit or the new man? If you call yourself saved and still like to do all the same old things, if there's no new desires that would eventually show up in life and be evidence to others, I need to warn you. This is possible. The devil might be deceiving you. That's what he does. He'll tell you in your mind, just keep telling yourself you're saved, you're fine. He'll tell you, he'll do that. If your heart's desires haven't changed and you're still leaning towards all those old man things, here's why. Look at verse 10. We read verse 9. Verse 9 says that we put off the old man with his deeds. Verse 10 says, and have put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge, after the image of him that created him. The new man is renewed in knowledge after the image of God. That's changing your affection. That's changing your heart. That's giving you new desires. After the image of God. See how this analogy here, it's twofold. The old man's put off, the new man is put on. Logic suggests to me that the old man deeds would no longer provide fulfillment or satisfaction in the individual. And so it would not be deeds that you would want to do. What does provide satisfaction or fulfillment to you? To me, in my life, in my heart. Indulgences of self. Happy, fun things all day, all day long. Shouldn't be. Should be a closer walk with God. What kind of fulfillment do I get? A saved individual, I believe, shows fruit. It stops doing old things. Even if he was a good kid or had led a good life and was morally all this and that, I did all that. I know what that's like. And yet when I was saved, there was things I stopped doing and started doing some new things. One of the first things I can remember is we had a teacher that annoyed us all in school. I mean, we were all annoyed. She was annoying. Nobody liked her. We badgered her and teased her and drove her nuts. I stopped doing that after I was saved. And not only that, not only did I stop doing that, I still remember it. We were all in the library and my friends were just, I mean, she was about in tears, literally. And I stood up for her. I started doing a new thing. I said, man, you guys need to leave her alone. That ain't right what you're doing. Not only was I not participating in what they were doing, but I did a new thing. Because my desire had changed. It wasn't right. It wasn't right what they were doing. This is what happens in salvation. I believe even the lost have an element of conscience. I believe they kind of know they're doing wrong, but they kind of enjoy it. But that conscience, in going through salvation, I believe that conscience gets a dramatic boost of desire to spend more time and effort on the morally right side of things. After salvation, your sensitivity towards evil will be enhanced, especially within and about yourself. Things that didn't bother you much before, now they're heavy weights on your mind. As a lost man, you know right from wrong, but as a saved person, you care about it. Desire and perception changes with the new man. The new man. Renewed in knowledge. Let's go look at this verse. This helps explain 2 Peter and verse 1. Or chapter 1, I'm sorry. 2 Peter. I forgot to mark it. Renewed in knowledge. And I tied it to this verse in 2 Peter 1, verse 4. Whereby are given unto us exceeding great and precious promises, that by these ye might be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world. Partakers of a divine nature. Partakers of a divine nature. That's what I see in Colossians 3:10. Put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge. Partakers of divine nature, renewed in knowledge. God changes your thought pattern. He changes your heart. You're a partaker through salvation, because of salvation. You're a recipient, a partaker of divine nature. We have the power of Christ within us. Christ is all and in all. If we're saved, your nature's changed. And I put on the new man, verse number 10, which is renewed in knowledge after the image of him that created him, where, verse 11 is I got parentheses around verse 11 because it's sort of descriptive of the image of him that created him, where there is neither Greek nor Jew, circumcision or uncircumcision, barbarian, Scythian, bond or free, but Christ is all. And in all. That divine nature is no respecter of persons. It doesn't matter how pretty you are, how ugly you are, how big, tall, small, color, none of that matters. The soul is what matters. And we all have souls as part of creation. We all have souls. We're all equal on that level. Ben Carson, the brain surgeon, talks about everybody's the same color inside. No respecter of persons. God is no respecter of persons. All your pedigree, your status, your ethnicity, nobleman or slave, it doesn't matter. All is Christ, and divine nature sees through all the surfaces and into the depths of character and heart. We're partakers of this nature, and yet we struggle. And yet we struggle with depraved pride. There's really only two kinds of people in this world, the lost and the saved. Christ is all. Christ is the Savior to one and the judge of the other. If Christ offends you, if the things of Christ offend you, if being in the assembly drives you, is irritating. I was going to say drives you crazy, but it don't have to be that bad. If the things of the assembly is irritating to you, which group are you in? There's only two kinds of people. Check your status. You know, both kinds of people, lost and saved, ultimately will honor God. And I don't quite understand how that works. It doesn't really make sense in the flesh. But ultimately, it's just like every knee shall bow. Ultimately, eventually, at some point, the entire creation honors God, even the lost. Both the lost and the saved will submit and bow to an Almighty. I remember a preacher said, I'd rather be. If you're saved, you'd rather be in the saved group of individuals, of souls that will eventually honor God in some way, shape, or form. God is no respecter of persons. By His grace, through salvation, we're partakers of His divine nature. I'd rather be. I'm going to turn back to Galatians in chapter 5. I'm going to put my finger there, because I'm going to make a quick reference back to that in just a second. As we read verse 12 in Colossians 3, the first two words are put on. Verse 10 said we put on the new man. And verse 12 says, put on, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering. Galatians 5:22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Put on bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind. You know, Galatians describes that as the fruit of the Spirit. And Colossians exhorts us to put on the same things. That suggests to me that at first the fruit of the Spirit is a gift. And it comes in salvation, and you get some of these qualities, I believe, at least a little bit. And Colossians is telling us to take that and expand it. Put it on. Take a hold of it. Grow it within yourself. Don't just be satisfied with just a little bit of kindness and meekness and humbleness of mind and temperance. I mean, we all have a little bit. But put it on. Put it on. Dig into it. I mean, don't just be good at what you do. Be great. We have the power of Christ. His power is infinite, and we're partakers of that divine nature. Don't be satisfied with good. Be great. Or at least want to be great. I don't want to just be a good Christian. I want to be a great one. Not for my glory, but for God's. I mean, his ability is infinite. The source is unending. That divine nature is perfect, and I have a little bit of it. Why be satisfied with just good? Christ is all. Love, joy, peace, long-suffering, meekness. These traits are a natural result of an inward change of heart. They're a natural result. They're the fruit that exhibits proof in our walk that our heart has changed. They're righteous works. They're goals requiring effort. They're a process of maturity to gain or attain to. And they're also I don't know how to say this right. You can fake some of these things. You can fake some of them. I mean, we have that ability, that deviousness in this flesh to fake kindness, affection. But it won't be consistent. You can't fake it and be consistent. And most of the time, everybody else can see through it when it's fake. In a sense, don't kid yourself. Check your heart. God's given us a portion of these traits at salvation, like the parable of the talents. What are we doing with them? Are we stifling or hiding or ignoring them, or do we even really sort of not realize they're even there? What are we doing with them? Are we suppressing them because we have this other agenda? Or, if our affections are set on things above, are we cultivating? Are we investing, expanding, using these traits, exercising them and growing them to God be the glory? Verse 12, let's reread that. Put on, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering, forbearing one another, and forgiving one another. If any man have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye, and above all these things, put on charity, which is the bond of perfectness. 12, 13, and 14, these verses all work together as one statement. 13 is really just expounding on the trait of long suffering. And 14 is the most important trait in a verse all by itself again. Just like lying was in a verse all by itself, charity is in a verse all by itself. Love. Charity, love, affection. That's, I mean, you're talking about the heart. You're talking about, what do I really want? What do I love? If we could get love right in our heart, I believe these other things would naturally fall into place. Christ is the example. Look at verse 13 again. Christ is the example. Love, forgiveness. These mortal bodies won't achieve it 100%, but the genuinely saved person desires to achieve these things. Christ is the example. Christ is the example, not just in forgiveness, but Christ is in the example for all of these things. Even as Christ exhibited love, so do ye. Even as Christ exhibited forgiveness, so do ye. I mean, you ain't done nothing better than the way Christ did it. And here's the exhortation is Christ did it. You do it. Forbearing. Forbearing one another. dwell on that thought. What does forbearing mean? He could have set Christ as the example for each and every trait mentioned. He didn't do that. He brought forbearing and forgiveness out in a single verse and set Christ. I mean, Christ is the example for all of those. But there's special attention drawn to forbearing and forgiveness. And Christ is set up as the example. Forbearing one another. Being patient with one another. Helping one another. Forbearing is an attitude of forgiveness. A patient mentality, not just a passive ignoring of what you don't like, but forbearing. It has more effort in it. An attitude of forgiveness. The attitude that actually prevents offense. Think about that. If your attitude is right, and your focus is proper, you can get in this flesh, I believe this, and it's because of Christ and His grace, but you can get your attitude such that you are not offendable. It's achievable. It is. The flesh can do it. With the power of Christ and the grace of God, you can be not offendable. That's forbearing. Forbearing one another. And above all these things, put on charity. And we're going to have to wrap this up. I want to leave you with this. The bond of perfectness. The bond of completeness. The bond of a full, all-in attitude to the cause of Christ and a heart condition that is a new man. Charity is the bond of perfectness. May God bless you.